Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, the world building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. Today's episode, we are discussing military traditions.
We all live in the real world. We all experience the different military traditions and culture elements. You know, the history of militaries across humanity is rife with traditions, which I think could be pretty broadly defined.
Yeah, I think a military tradition can range from a philosophical approach to combat and warfare, all the way down to very specific rites, rituals, practices, and traditions or habits or customs, like, you know, the 21-gun salute or playing taps at night. Those are all very
traditions,
very nitty-gritty traditions, versus the Spartans in ancient Greece having their, we are descended from Hercules. And so,
and the agogi and being like thrown to the wolves as a child, you have to make your way back, and all of that craziness.
That is a much more philosophical
and
military tradition.
Like the training,
definition of military tradition.
The training of your military is a tradition in and of itself. You know, like going to Ranger school. You know, that's a military tradition in like the U.S. military. All the slogans and the mottos and the branding and the logos of, like, you know, there's so many badges and symbols in the U.S. military alone. I mean, we are the biggest military in the world. We have so much shit going on that there is infinite military traditions to extract from us.
And it often, is a culture in and of itself, I think.
Like, oh, yeah, 100%. If you ever spend time with military people, you are like, what the fuck?
It has its own language. It has its own rites, rituals, and the way they talk about certain people are pretty deferential to the point of almost them being like supernatural figures, right?
Yeah. I mean, and hierarchical structures.
Absolutely.
And a lot of this is just descended through history as well.
This is all to not say cult. We're trying really hard not to say
cult. I wouldn't say it's a cult. There's parts of it that are culty.
It's a cult in that it is a segmented, very specific group with its own culture.
Yeah, and critically, I think a cool tradition is oaths, and like you have to swear oaths to be in the military, to do lots of stuff. You have to swear an oath, and then within that, they have various creeds. You know,
absolutely.
Like, and I think there's just so many different pieces that you can throw out that make militaries have an additional flavor. And we see it in spec fic, but it's often just inspired by the real world. Whether,
are there any in Halo? Like, I've never played Halo, really. You have.
Because it's super military shooter based.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything cool in there? I don't know.
I mean, yes. I think the coolest thing that it did is that it has, because it's very much based off of like the U.S. Marine Corps. Mm. Instead, it's the United Nations Space Corps, but it's UNSC.
I got it.
And they're all Marines or whatever. They have the Orbital Drop Shock Troopers, ODSTs, which are really cool. And they sit in pods and they basically, it's like kind of like amphibious landings or something, or paratroopers, where they put them in pods and they drop them from space. And so the pod just basically like straight up just like a fucking spike goes into the ground, and then they jump out of the pod and are ready to fight.
That's pretty cool.
And they're pretty cool. So
that's pretty cool.
They're the definition of shock troops, because they just send them from space directly to where you are. Yeah. They're cool. They have a cool tradition. Otherwise it's just basic U.S. stuff.
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, there's a reason people love World War II military history, because there's so much fucking weird traditions and stuff. You know, we got a lot.
Even the salute, everything down like to something as commonplace as the salute is
your heart out to somebody.
Every spec fic military sort of ends up having its own cool salute. Even in the Dune films, you know, the House Atreides had the Kali sword fighting salute where they put the blade to their forehead.
Yeah.
Which they stole directly from Kali, but also looks dope and is very cool for a military society that is based on hand-to-hand blade combat. That makes sense that you would have some sort of blade salute.
Yeah.
I also in Dune really liked the Sautekar scene with the throat singing and the rituals with the blood, and they're putting the three stripes of blood on the Sautekar soldiers' foreheads.
Yeah.
That is clearly a tradition of some kind.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but it's dope.
I think special forces in any special operations, in any
Black Ops,
in anything,
are
cool as hell. I think everybody thinks that. And they're perfect for creating these types of traditions that don't need to be large scale. They can be small scale rituals to be a part of this elite group or whatever. And that's a really common element of all spec fic, is everybody creates this, like, the special team that does the cool thing.
Right.
You know, and you can just infuse that, and the Sadakar are an excellent example of that. And Because then you add, like, those types of things help build that fear that they invoke in people.
Or even the very related to that, actually, since you said special forces, it got me thinking about the Uruk-hai that are made in Isengard and before they go out to combat are branded or with the white hand of Saruman on their face.
Pretty fucking somewhere. Cool.
Pretty fucking cool, actually.
Yeah. Like, you know, William Wallace and the blue paint.
Yeah.
You know, the... I think any markings of any kind.
Absolutely.
You know, when people, you know, do the, you know, camouflage, or in those cases, not camouflage, war paint, just straight up war paint that has no practical benefit. It just looks intimidating, which is, I think, based off of a lot of Native American cultures did that same thing where they put on war paint that was intimidation based, not based on any practical benefit. Same thing in Scotland.
Or berserker type warriors that often got dressed up in animal skins.
Yeah.
Right.
It's fucking intense.
There's a lot of really intense shit, and it's all super, super cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into some noodles here. Give me your teas. What noodles did you bring today?
The Doctrine of Empathy.
The Doctrine of Empathy?
The Doctrine of Empathy.
Interesting.
Yeah. What about you? What you got?
Yes, Men Left Behind. Instead of No Man Left Behind.
Oh, instead of No Man Left Behind. Oh, got it. So you said Yes Man Left Behind. I thought it was like, we are going to abandon all sycophants.
Yeah, okay. Yes, comma, Men Left Behind.
Spectacular. Let's dive into that. Tell me about that.
Okay, so this is just concept. This is a concept of a plan. I don't have a plan yet. It is the idea that, you know, every military in the modern age is No Man Left Behind, camaraderie, you know, they are brothers in arms. Mm-hmm. If you're down, we bring you back.
Right.
You know, watch Black Hawk Down. Great example of this. Also, great fucking movie.
Fun fact, I got dumped by my very first girlfriend after seeing that movie.
Mm.
I was in eighth grade. It was not pleasant.
Okay. Fun fact.
I'm fine about it, though.
Oh, okay.
I'm completely over it.
Are you sure? Yeah. So I wanted to take away that concept and say, well, what if it's a bit more of a all, you know, everybody for themselves. If you get downed, we're not picking you up. And then you're just like, okay, well, then you're just a selfish mercenary group that doesn't quite make a military. So then how do you adapt this into a military context to say, you know, if you get downed, we're leaving you? And I think then it comes down to a bit of a Darwinist approach to say, if you get downed, if you're injured in any way, it's your fault. You didn't train hard enough. You are weak. You don't belong in this military. After all, we're gonna leave you be. And it's like you bring in honor and shame questions as well. You could just say, oh, you know, it's, you know, I don't know the military traditions of those, you know, like the samurai, for instance. I feel like this would be something they could be keen on, is saying, you know, you have shamed yourself by falling in combat in any way. So
right. They very famously had ritualized suicide if you did.
Yeah.
So my mind immediately wants to know, would there be a cyanide pill type situation where if you get downed, you have to kill yourself to free to free others from the burden of saving you? Or would there be a tradition on the opposite side of, if one of your colleagues or comrades gets downed, you mercy kill them?
I think neither.
Just keep moving.
I think neither. And this is why. If you can make it back, you are strong enough and you're a good asset. So it's like you keep fighting and keep trying to make it back on your own terms, on your own two feet. And if you do, great. We're happy to have you back.
Are you seen as, is that seen as better or worse than making it back with the rest of the group?
Good question. I don't know. It could go either way.
Sure.
Could be completely the same, or it could be, you know, how dare you get down, or it could be that was a true, like you truly got tested.
Yeah.
And you made it back. Maybe that's an honor, but you have to do it on your own terms. We will not come save you.
Yeah.
We don't save people. They have to save themselves.
I like that. The, let's not call it no man, all men left behind. Let's call it your life is yours to save.
Interesting. Yeah. Like,
right.
Yeah. Your fate
is yours.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to focus on taking care of yourself. And just as you expect others to take care of and protect themselves. You have no expectation that anyone shoulders any of your burden.
Yeah.
It is on you to save yourself.
Yeah.
You can still be well trained and coordinated tactically. But if all shit goes falls apart, then everyone knows that they have that it is on them to get themselves home.
Yeah. And like, say tactically, some captain makes a bad call and it's a bad plan, doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's still on you because you should have known better. You should have spoken
that's
up.
That's interesting.
You should have corrected the captain. You should have never let that captain be in that position. Because maybe this is a situation where, you know, everyone's fate is in their own hands. They choose and elect their ranking officers.
Hmm.
If you're gonna be in command, you have to have earned the trust of your crew where they will believe your plans and go forward with them and have enough of a rapport where they can challenge them so they can make sure they all get back.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And really like turning it into like a bit Dutch, just incredibly direct, incredibly honest. And, you know, like, oh, that's a bad idea. We're not doing that. And everyone be like, yeah, you're right. And just kind of being able to accept that. And your face was very confused. Like,
What did the Dutch have to do with this?
Because they're brutally honest and they tell people exactly what they think and they tell people.
I did not know that this was a stereotype of the Dutch.
My boss is Dutch. One of my coworkers, just whenever she's being overly direct, will just say, you're being very Dutch right now. Huh. Whenever she's being a little too much.
Huh.
Because they are famously... And I
never knew that.
You ever talked to Dutch people? They can be super direct. They're not always.
I have.
You watched Ted Lasso. There's a whole thing with Jan Maas in that show about, he's not being rude. He's just being Dutch. Because Dutch people can just be super direct.
It was cool. A bit too much of a goldfish and forgot.
There you go. We'll get that Ted Lasso joke. Anyway, so I was more channeling that of like this military ends up having this like brutally honest approach where everyone has a really thick skin and takes nothing personal because they're all looking out for their own fate. And right. If somebody is actually has a bad idea and everyone can convince them it's a bad idea, then they're like, yeah, I'm glad we didn't do that. I also don't want to die and they won't cover me. They won't save my ass. So them helping me have a better idea helps everybody.
What is interesting about that too is you snuck in there the idea of military leaders being almost elected democratically.
Not almost.
Very deliberately.
Very deliberately. Yeah, I literally said the word elected. So yes.
Did you? I probably zoned out.
Yeah. Wow.
What? Wow, what? But I think that's very interesting and gets into when you abandon the hierarchy, when you abandon complete mission at all costs, when you all of these in the way that we think about them, particularly from the US context, you are freed up a little bit to have more fun with different approaches. Yep. And I think that's fun.
Yeah. And it's still there's still a hierarchy. It's just it's a hierarchy with an ability to have no confidence.
An anarcho-communist syndicate. No. Where we alternate taking turns as a sort of unified executive for the week.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just like you instill the idea that there's no confidence votes available. Yeah. You know, and I mean, I think a lot of people in combat situations in the real world will say, like, you know, if you don't have if you don't have faith in your commander, it's much harder to go in. But if you have a commander that you can really trust, then it's much easier to go into war. But in this case, it's like, well, you get to make sure you have faith in them because you all chose them rather than letting the guy who just is like, you know, like watching Band of Brothers. And like they do such a great job of showing that when they're like going to go after the first episode and Captain Sobel is like clearly not a good combat leader, but is a really good trainer.
You mean Ross?
Yes. I mean Ross. I mean David Schwimmer. He does great in that role too.
Ross.
Really impressive in that role. Yeah. But
I've been noticing that recently. Anytime there is a character on screen that I fucking hate, I am so much more impressed by that performance than a character that I love.
Yeah, that's. I mean, famously, I think it's much meatier performances are villains,
but not even villain. I'm distinct because.
Yeah,
I don't hate Vader. I don't hate
no. It's a minimum.
Silence of the Lambs. Hannibal Lecter.
That's a great performance, though. Fuck.
But I'm not saying it isn't. But I'm saying there is something about a character that you hate.
Yeah. Did you watch Bad Monkey on Apple TV?
No.
I highly recommend it. It's one of the best performances I've seen of somebody making me absolutely despise a character.
Okay.
In the way that is so different. I don't know.
I'll check it out.
It was also just a pretty good show.
Sure.
Vince Vaughn just doing Vince Vaughn things of just be the character that you got famous doing. Don't try to mix it up.
Yeah.
Kind of just do that.
More people need to be comfortable being character actors, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so
I think that's really interesting. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think it's the end of the idea. So let's move on to yours.
The doctrine of empathy is the idea that soldiers must constantly be aware of the true impacts of what they do, both good and bad.
Okay.
So part of the tradition in this military is that you are trained and raised in a, as you move throughout the system, not only are you taught tactics and skills to complete the mission, but you are taught to understand intimate details about the environment you are operating in, where you are living, and the world that you're occupying, so that you can understand and actually be a more effective soldier by having empathy and understanding of people who you are fighting against and the people that you are fighting for.
Okay.
This is important because you are not meant to be a rampaging, soulless killer.
You're a warrior poet.
Effectively, yes. You are meant to be a squadron, a militia, an army of people who are there to achieve victory. This is a world that has been plagued by constant warfare, and the collective society as a whole is just done with the slaughter. It is too much. But also recognizing that war is inevitable, they established the doctrine of empathy, which now states that before every combat, before every engagement of any kind, either through magic or sci-fi, I don't care, up to you, soldiers, commanders, and generals are forced to experience the fear and terror and death of all of the people that could potentially be killed in this combat before they go into war, to be aware of what they are going to do. They are also meant there and shown the relief and fear and positive emotions of the people that they are fighting for. So this psychic experience, this experiential learning, is to teach you, remind you what you're fighting for, and also remind you what it actually is that you're doing, to keep you in line and to make sure that you don't fly off the handle and become a raging murder machine.
Okay.
That you are meant to specifically complete your target and nothing else.
So it's kind of like you need to be able to complete your objective with the minimal amount of harm possible.
As much as possible.
It's kind of, I mean, to gamify it, imagine you're playing a stealth game and it's you need to kill your target and you need to do it where you kill no civilians, you're not spotted, your score lowers every time you do anything other than the objective that you have.
Right. Collateral damage
is a problem.
Is a problem.
But in this case, it's making it where everybody in the military has, through magical or scientific means, been forced to experience the worst case scenario versions.
Right.
So they have enough of, like, you know, assuming, well, we'll get to that, I guess, in a second. They have enough empathy to ensure that they only do what they're tasked to do and don't deviate and don't cause any more harm, because they already have kind of the emotional damage built into them a little bit.
Correct.
Okay.
So that when you go into combat and you are aware, you face down another human being, inspired a little bit by cyberpunk, you have already experienced what it is like to be killed by a soldier from your side. the fear and the terror and that feeling of dying, you know what you're about to put that person
through. And you've probably experienced the other side of you've experienced the pain of losing your comrades.
Correct.
By overextending, for instance.
By overextending. And at the same time, it is balanced by, yes, this is all true, I need to minimize this, but I still need to complete my mission because yep. I am empathetic to the people, the cause, right? The cause driving me, the relief that will come of knowing we defeated the enemy at our gates, right?
I think you could almost leave that empathy out. I think that's more like you are a true believer and you're a patriot, you're whatever. I think here's where you get into more, who's in this military? Who's in these units that is doing this? And that I think you need a pretty robust screening process because mm-hmm. you need people who are committed to it, who won't be deterred by that. Like when they go through that empathy blast, they aren't completely deterred and saying, well, then nonviolence entirely. We need to stop all of this.
Right.
So you need to make sure that they aren't going to fall victim to that if they're in your military, but you also need to make sure that they have empathy,
right?
And can't, like,
you have to weed out the sociopaths
and the psychopaths and
who are gonna and have that and get off on it.
Frequently militaries do attract these types of people. Sure. So like, because they can inflict pain. Yeah, you have to make sure that you can weave, like, you have to chart like a very narrow path between these two extremes of too much empathy, too little empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of cool, which I think also means it can't be a particularly big military. Maybe this is just a part of the military. Maybe this is just one unit. Right, I don't know.
Maybe this is, maybe to this your is the Black point, Ops maybe unit. This is a Black Ops. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they have to do the dirtiest work. So then saying, like, you're going in here and, like, you are preventing a really bloody situation.
Right.
But if it goes south, you will at least know how, you will know the limits of, right. Like, okay, you can kill two civilians and still minimize the harm.
You know exactly what you're getting into, and you know exactly what your threshold is.
Yeah. You know what the threshold of this mission is for pain and psychological harm to everybody. So then you can navigate that better. But if you need to inflict that, you're capable of it.
Maybe that's part of the screening process, is you are assessed and placed into different military units based on the level or the amount of empathy you are capable of tolerating before your mind breaks.
Yeah.
And so there could be a couple psychopaths in there that are like, no, when things get really bad, we gotta open the cage and let them out.
Yeah. It's one of those secret qualifications that you need to be a good therapist, to be a therapist at all, is you need to be able to let, you need to have a ton of empathy, but you need to never get bogged down in other people's problems or their emotions, because you have to keep pushing through, but you need to be able to see it fully and let it wash through you.
Right.
And these guys need that.
Same thing.
Same exact thing.
Yep. And it's just a mechanism for forcing it.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. I think it being a Black Ops unit is fascinating.
Yeah.
Like, I'm imagining
It makes more sense as a Black Ops unit rather than a full military.
Yeah. I'm imagining it as you have the character who is, you know, like the former Black Ops guy who is charismatic and really like loving and empathetic and, you know, like in D&D terms, like super wise and all these things, but is an assassin and is brutally good at being an assassin, but is like stupidly nice because he knows that this is necessary work. And I fully, you know, it's almost like we're moving into Thane Krios territory there a little bit.
I was thinking Thane Krios. I was also thinking Sam Wilson in, very specifically in Captain America Civil War, as the Falcon, this soldier, this incredibly decorated, highly specialized flying soldier,
yeah,
who then comes back and becomes a counselor at the VA.
Oh, yeah.
That was his job when Steve Rogers found him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that type of, you end up with that type of person.
Yeah. Interesting. An aside, but that was really where he was at his best, I feel like.
Completely.
Before they were like, you get to be Captain America. It's like, I don't think it worked. Just let Captain America go away.
I think it could have worked with different writing.
Yeah.
I think Anthony Mackie's actually a fantastic character. I think he would have been a fantastic character actor. I think Sam Wilson is a great character. I think he could have done it.
He has the charm of a superhero actor. Like he's Anthony Mackie.
He's like, got that swagger. Absolutely.
Yeah. And just, he's really charismatic and charming.
The gentleness that he showed in Civil War was really powerful.
Yeah.
And I think he could have been a great cat. I think they just did him dirty. Also, I misspoke. It was not Civil War. It was Winter Soldier. Still the best Marvel movie.
Probably.
I think Winter Soldier, the original Iron Man, and Infinity War are the three best.
I think you're probably right. I really did enjoy Endgame, though. Endgame,
you did or did not?
Did.
Oh, Endgame is great.
I feel like
that's my number four.
I think it's like, what makes a good Marvel movie? And I think it's as a movie versus as a meta product where it is wrapping up and like coalescing like 19 films and ending all that on such a strong
10 years.
And that is such a fucking feat. It's like where like Return of the King wins everything because it's also just like, good fucking job doing all these.
Yeah.
It's not like it's that much better than the other two movies. It's saying these three movies as a product are a masterpiece. And I think Endgame is kind of that. It's saying this was a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Some of it was shitty, but most of it's a masterpiece. Great job.
I agree.
Anyway. All right. Do you want to say on this one?
No. It's that.
Cool.
I just thought it was an interesting concept to explore of how do you force empathy? How do you bring that in very mechanically.
Yeah. All right. Well, then let's move on to some frozen lasagna here, Ethan.
Oh.
Why don't you go?
One of the reasons we all love war movies is because there's great scores. Same reason why whenever you're playing a video game, you always know when a boss is coming because there's great boss music. You have also heard soldiers say one of the most surprising things about combat is the silence of it all, of how quiet it gets once combat is over.
Yeah.
I think a interesting and also kind of fun, more lighthearted military tradition would be the ritual of soldiers getting together and picking a playlist for the combat that they were about to go into.
It's like
music has been used throughout history to keep soldiers coordinated and blah blah blah.
Drummer boys.
Yeah, and maybe there's something, you know, the app that they use. This is probably more sci-fi, but maybe the app that they use has subliminal coding to keep them on board. But you still get to pick, and it could be really funny then to be cutting back and forth between different soldiers. You know, so one person has metal when they're out in the field fighting, you know, sword to sword, and then it cuts to the sniper who is maybe just has white noise on in the background to drown everything out so that they can hear and function, be very focused as an archer. But then someone in there would have some light classical music or something. Maybe the barbarian is actually listening to Barbra Streisand or something, right? Like, I think it could be fun like that.
Okay. Over a minute, but whatever. We'll get over it.
Productive rule breaking.
Mine is, I like the idea of demotion in military ranks. And what if you put a cap on every single rank in the military and say, well, there's only one general. If you want to be the general, you have to go through a duel with the other general.
Oh, rule of two?
Well, only at the general level. but then like there's 50 colonels. If you want to be a colonel, you have to challenge a colonel and take his spot.
Yeah.
And it's all these like non-lethal duels to take these slots and keep advancing up and down. So you can go from general down to private, and it, like, you can just have a fall from grace. You can ascend meteorically, but and maybe it's not just a straight combat duel. Maybe it's also like a test of knowledge. If you want to be in a commanding position, you have to be able to show various skills or whatever. And so maybe the duels become more complicated over time. But I like the idea that you can just challenge and move up and down.
Yeah.
So
that's really fun.
All right, what's stuck for you? You want me to go?
No. I like, in your idea, I like the switch that we stumbled into of moving from all men left behind to your life is yours. Your life is your responsibility.
Yeah, I think that was a good reframe.
I think that is something that you actually could get behind and use as a foundational philosophy to structure a military.
Correct.
I think that is, and it's interesting because it also fundamentally undoes a lot of what we traditionally think about when we think of military actions.
And it avoids the like you know, the honor element and the what we talked about with the samurai, and like you'd have to kill yourself. We avoid that, and we avoid the like the modern military tropes, and you kind of like you navigate a new third way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which is just really, I really like that. For mine, I think the moving it into more of a black ops, I think was really cool. And I think also using the practice of empathy to assess people and place them. That is your screening mechanism, as well as the pre-combat ritual of experiencing forced empathy. I think using it for both was those I think are what stuck for me. What about you?
This will be an anticlimactic response. Same.
Dope.
On both fronts. Those are the two things that stuck for me as well.
So, dope.
And I guess just to note that it was also the thing that stuck was each of us coming up with the slight pivot of the other person's idea.
Yeah.
Which is the benefit of this type of work is that you present your idea and then someone tells you, what if it was this way slightly instead? And then you're like, that's better.
Yeah. Well, that's way better.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's what stuck for us.
Let us know what stuck for you.
Emails in the show notes.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.